population?
The working population is on the upper part of Lamar.
And that was called Hoppertown?
That was called Hoppertown.
Why?
I don't know where it was named Hoppertown.
Was there a family by that name?
It could have been. It's like Deconic. It wasn't Deconic. I had a teacher come here. They call it Chippendale.
Right.
Then it changed to Deconic. The same way, Oregon, you see. Of course, Lime Rock was Hoppertown, and Hoppertown was the upper part, and Lime Rock General was right down below. That's why I say along the Main Street, the better, the bosses and the executives lived on it. The homes were even better built, you can see that. The upper part, mostly frame houses, they weren't too bad, except that where Mr. Fitch lived, that was a pretty well-built home. That's why I told you where McNeil actually got his start. But then he moved on to the Lime Rock next to the rectory down there. He moved all his operations on there. Of course, he built that big home, down in the center of town. And, as I said, of course, they had a lot of creamery, Borden's Creamery. In fact, I talked to Al Borden about the Borden Creamery.
Where was the creamery?
Tom, as you go to Music Mountain, just below there, there's some houses there now.
Yes.
It was right on a railroad, and they used to pasteurize the milk there. And see,
right near Lime Rock Station.
Right near Lime Rock Station. Lime Rock Station, that's where all the ironworks were shipped out.
It must have been a busy place.
It was. It was. The Limerick was quite a town. They tell you about now that this town actually isn't improved at all. This town, in fact, has gone downhill. We have wealthy people here. But there, I got to get another thing, tell you another thing about Limerick, which I bypassed. Now, there was more to it than Limerick. As I said, all the freight, all the materials came to Limerick Station. Of course, that milk factory down there, all the surrounding farmers used to draw their milk down there and deliver the milk where they sold it to the Borden Company. They used to come for all the surrounding, way to Holland all over. Way out as far as where George Miner used to live, he used to draw the milk down there. And that went on for a long time until finally that closed down too. And then finally they had one, finally the creamer shipped it up to King. They had one up there, but they transferred all the operation out. Now, there's two other operations connected to Lime Rock. This is years back. I think one of them was just around when I was about 10 or 12 years old. Back in the Lime Rock racetrack, you heard them call it the clay bed. You heard them call it.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
The reason they call it clay bed, some company found a deposit of clay up on top of the clay beds. And actually, if you drive up there, you can drive up there from Route 7, it goes right up through, or you come up through the Pine Swamp Road. This clay bed was produced white clay, pure white clay, and some company decided they could use it for making china. So they started an operation. They got the equipment to dig the stuff out of the ground. In fact, a lot of it's still laying there. They're all rusted up, great big wheels and all the gears and stuff that's left up from this operation. What they used to do, they used to take this clay and make a slurry out of it. Send it down, not a conduit. Now you wouldn't believe this. It went down off the mountain on Route 7 and across the river to a railroad siding, where the railroad went up on the opposite side of the Oostenrijk mountain. You know that?
Yeah.
And with this big pipe, they used to load these cars with this liquid slurry, clay. And that went on for quite some time until it became impractical. And finally, the whole. My dad, I talked to different people, said that it went along for about 3-4 years, and it got too expensive.
What period would that have been?
I must have been around about 1908, 1910, somewhere in there. Then on the other side of the river, below the creamery, right on the bend, you know, this railroad takes a big bend there. There was a factory there. I used to go by there years ago with a horse and wagon. Dad and other people. The Dietz Lantern Company. Dietz, D-I-E-D-Z. They made lanterns there. They were there for about quite some time. This was around about 1912, 13. It was still there. And all of a sudden that moved away from there. It wasn't practically moving on, I guess, close to where to get the material. Then another outfit came in there, they used to get these rubbers, these old tires, and they decided to make rubber mats out of them, cut them up. That went along for quite a while. And that didn't work out too well, and I guess they lasted about a year and a half and they closed up. Then there was going to be a woodworking mill there. But that didn't last too long either. Finally, the whole thing just went to pot. They left it there, and I guess it finally caught fire one time, you know, railroad come through it.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, you were steaming the fire with nothing. There was always a fire going because the ashes blow out a stack, and you see brush fires going all the well. And I guess it burned right down. Between that and the clay bed, see, a lot of people don't realize that. When I tell them about this small shop, I said, who's down the river? They couldn't believe it.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew it was there because I used to go by it. And they used to make these lanterns, or lamps and everything else. And that's a well-known product at one time, this beach or whatever else. Because this clay bed business is still up there. And different people, if you know where it is, I wouldn't go up there in the summer because that's where all the rattlesnakes.
Yes.
But the pits are still there, and the thing is white as the snow. It's white, just like snow. In fact, Chili Verde got some for funny my Gibbs one time. He went up there, and beautiful stuff. It looked like spackle.
Now, was this above the gravel pits later?
Oh, yeah, way up on top of the mountain.
Worked there, yeah.
Way up on top of the mountain. It's way back at the racetrack. Now, if you go up on the racetrack mountain, that mountain goes up there, and then you go down, then there's another mountain. You see? And the only way you get up there, I told you, when you get down Route 7, just before you start on another, down about 3 miles, then it goes around a bend. This side of Bendis Road goes straight up the mountain. And the way I get up there, doing the depression CC camps, they were up there, and they had buildings with that. And they opened, they built roads, cut the woods off, cleaned it all up, and you actually could drive up where this clay bed was. Let's say, I still think some of the machinery is still there, just from the rust of that's all. But you can see what the actual operation was.
So this pipe that they used to carry
went across the river.
Right across the river?
Up, down the mountain, gravity flow.
What about the road? What they overhead?
Overhead?
Over the
whole thing was overhead. Well, it had to be overhead to go across the river.
Yeah.
But you see it, that's what I tell you, what happened with the oil mines and all this thing, it was impractical. Although labor was dirt cheap, my father...
What were the wages?
Well, my father, he started out $2 a day. Then he got to give you a raise $2.50 a day. But they worked 10 hours a day, some of them people. Then the best you could do down the foundry, down Limerick, was $3.50 a day. Sometimes they used to work 6 days a week. See, sometimes you used to work late, they paid a little overtime, paid you straight time for overtime, so the most you could make, if you made $20 a week, you were doing pretty good.
Right.
And on a farm, they only paid you $30 a month and board, you see, and my father worked during slack time in the summer when things were bad, the foundry, they would shut the foundry down, say, for about 3-4 weeks, then my father used to go out and get himself a job on a farm, like pitching hay and stuff like that. Well, you didn't make much, and they give it $2 a day, then that's all the farmer would say, that's all I can afford.
Right. And what about the paper mill? You must have been familiar with that.
That paper mill down Limerick, that was a joke. The Robinsons, one of them is still right, Elliot, that's the son of one of the fellows that worked there. Most of them are all dead now. This fellow's Robinson, his father died of his name was Ridge Robinson. He died and his brother died. If this fella, Dard Hunter, he's from Chillicothe, Indiana. I don't know how the hell he got around here. But he found out about this mill with the water power and all. He thought he was going to make a paper. Well, he must have been on him when he found out about these people who made handmade paper. That's his big deal. So he brought him over here. That was a dreadful. I felt sorry for these people. He brought them over there and he got them ensconded in this word of General Ceramic.
Brought them from England.
From England. Brought the whole family. Lynn Gottingham's one of them.
Oh, really?
And his wife, yeah. Lynn Gottingham married a Robson girl. She's the only one left of the original family. And he came up because he was going with a girl then and he finally married her. And they all moved in and they're probably on the verge of starvation though. It was during the Depression. And Dard Hunter just set him up on his paper business. I used to watch him. He used to, I don't just how the operation went, but they had these bats, they made this pulp paper. Then he used to take it out and put it on his screen and it would dry out. I guess he'd done some other work with it. And it was really sheet paper and was handmade and he advertised it. But he didn't make enough money even to pay these guys. Half the time he wouldn't pay them. And see, he found the whole operation went to pot. I guess it went about a year and a half, and the whole thing went to pot.
But he did become a famous paper maker.
He did?
Oh, yes, yeah. There's a museum in Wisconsin, the Dyard Hunter Museum. There's information about it in this display out, and you can look at it later on.
I don't see how that, Don Langrock, he had a guy named a Beach, was general manager, and the reason I know about this Beach, his wife, she became an announcer on NBC. I don't know how she got the job. Well, she wouldn't be here, but her kids was here, and Beach was in charge of this paper mill, and Dyard Hunter had come east from Chillicothe. In fact, he owed my father some money. I think the best, he owed him $25, and the best he could get was $10. And went down and met the guy, said, God, you got to give my father some money, you know? This is a depression. Well, he said, I just don't have it right now. I said, I'll take what you got. So he had $10, and he gave us the $10 during depression. $10 was $10. But he owed these other Englishmen, the Robson, all kinds of them. Mm-hmm. And they were, I'm telling you, they were living hand to mouth. It was just a dreadful situation. And finally, they went to work at Hassa School, you know, to become Englishmen and stuff like that. And this got a whole operation up to Granning Hall.
Mm-hmm. And of course, so that wasn't in operation very long then?
I don't think more than 2 years it was that.
Now, he didn't erect that building, though.
No, that building was the Grissmer.
That was the Grissmer.
And the other part where they worked was the pattern shop.
Mm-hmm.
But the old, because they still had the water supply, terminal. That's where they got their water from. Mm-hmm. And I used to wash them there. It wasn't too complicated, I guess, the mixture they had to make that and all just right. And then used to put it on this stuff where they filled with the water out of it. And let it dry and then make this sheet paper. It was pretty nice looking paper. I had a couple of sheets of this stuff. But now you're telling me this. I talked to these people here, and they had no use for them at all. It was run by the goddamn crook. And Beach, you know, he was in charge. And they'd go to Beach and say, how about our money?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he said, I haven't got the money from Dyard Hunter yet. Because Hunter was supposed to be, that's where the payroll came from. Well, these poor people were running off of time, you know. Well, he left this Beach in charge remains to be seen. He lived in a mill anyway. And I saw Dyard Hunter about 2 or 3 times. But now you're telling me
maybe his fortunes improved after he left here.
Did he run a paper mill in Ohio? He was originally from Ohio.
I don't know much about his background, but I do know that there is a museum now named after him in Wisconsin, a paper museum.
Yeah, that's pretty big. I don't know. He looked to me as if he's a promoter, you know, like all these guys that go around the country. And he went to England and he found these people were paper makers over there because they had a pretty good job.
Mm-hmm.
And he convinced them that they would make their fortune, you see, on this paper.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can see how they'd be disillusioned.
Oh, gee, that was terrible. Well, you should have seen him. I used to go down and visit him once in a while. Old people, you know, they were just living hand to mouth. You know, the afternoon tea, and the boys grew up, you know, they've come along in pretty good shape. But the thing got worse and worse and worse, and finally they got themselves a job at Hassa School as houseman. We've been through Len Gotti and his wife, they all worked at Hassa School as housemen and, you know, chambermaids.
Right.
Otherwise, you know, that's when the first one went to pot. Well, they went to pot a couple of months before that. Dyard Hunter didn't show up no more, and Beach took off. He never paid anybody. Mm-hmm. He left the whole operation there. I walked in the mill after the mill was there. After they left, I walked in and walked through it. And they said to Robson, what are you going to do with that stuff? He said, what the hell good is it? Can't sell it. Who are you going to sell it to? I said, what about Dyard Hunter? He said, that and that guy's a goddamn crook. He ain't paid us yet.
Mm-hmm. Then the building came down.
Yeah, they tore down the
flood.
The
after the flood.
Yeah.
So when did you leave Lime Rock?
I left Lime Rock in 1922. Mm-hmm. I went to Bridgeport.
Then you were in Bridgeport for a few years before you.
Well, I went to Bridgeport. I went to trade school. Mm-hmm. Took a machinist vocation. I worked on there for a while, and then I went to Hartford. And I worked about 7 or 8 years, and until this depression came around after 1929 crash, the whole thing went to pot.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I put, there was no use to staying around in Harper. You couldn't make it go, so I thought I'd take off to Lime Rock. At least you might be able to pick some job out of the country on a farm or doing some outside work, which mm-hmm. turned out to be true. He's just about making a living. And that's when I tell you that I met the Robinsons, you know. I said to my father, what's going on? I said, oh, they got a paper mill gone. I said, I've done some work, I ain't got paid yet. So then I met these Robinsons, and I said, I walked in and introduced myself, and I said, who the hell's the big wheel here? Well, I'm a dire hunter. Where'd you people come from? Oh, he says, we came from England, Maidstone, England. I said, how come you came over here? Well, he came on and bring us a great picture, said it was a great opportunity to make handmade paper, it's a big market for it. And when we gets over here, the goddamn man, he doesn't have any money. And we started making paper, and he promised it was going to be a big deal, and it never was a big deal. They did make quite a bit of paper, and I guess he sold it, but he must have had other expenses to pay up, and by the time he got around to pay them, they even went to the labor board. They couldn't mm-hmm. do nothing with him, you know. And they said, you just have to wait maybe until he gets some money to pay you off. Well, they kept it up for about 6-7 months, finally they said, this is it, unless we get paid, we're not doing it. Well, he'd come back and give him some money and get him going again. Finally, he's like, this is a losing proposition. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I says to him, why would you come here? He said, we don't know. We don't know. It wasn't too good in England, and here it's worse. So that's when they started looking around. But that's how the paper mill.
So when you came here from
I came from Hartford
at that time, and you went to work for the mill mines?
I went to work in about 1934 to mill mines. Mm-hmm. So used to work from April to December then, mm-hmm. part-time work. They had a caretaker then. And then after during the war, I went up for a study. In 1939, moved up for a study. Mm-hmm. But that place went downhill too, you know. One time the mill mine was big, it was quite a place. Of course, you saw in that old house there. They tore that building in 1955. Mm-hmm. Should have used that lawn right down to the wall. You remember, it was all lawn. Beautiful scene. That big garden there, those three or four was working there. So she kept going downhill and downhill. At the lab, you know, they were trying to sell the place. And everybody asked me, why did they tear the big house down? Well, they tore the big house down because Mrs. Mumline wanted her own house. Mm-hmm. I said, but the old house is better than this one. I said, maybe so. It's gone. You see.
So that's all up for sale now? Or has it been sold?
No, I don't know if it's sold or not. I don't know if it's up for sale in both places. Where I live in a house across the road. And to tell you the truth, I think if you look at the house, I think it was Mill Mines. See, Mill Mine, he worked at the school.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
He was a dollar a year man. He never got paid. He just worked there. It was his job. Because even during the way he went out to Pratt & Whitney, he's graduated from Yale College, and he graduated from MIT, structural engineering, but actually he taught history and mathematics at the school. And when he went out during the war out to Pratt & Whitney, he got himself a pretty good job in instructing magneto, Bosch magneto and stuff like that. But he came back. I says to Mr. Mellmine, you got a pretty good job, I should think he stayed out there. That's not for me. So he went back up to school. So when he built this place, if you look at the structure from the road, it looks like a dormitory from up to school. Mm-hmm. And everybody says the same. We always thought that the mill mine place would go to school. And I think that was the idea. And when he took sick, I guess he never bothered to change the wilderness. Mm-hmm. It had been to their advantage to have the school taken. Even if they sell it now, the taxes would eat up at the biggest part of the sale price.
Right.
And the boys were already complaining, so the state taxes are just killing us, and the same way the house. And the house was never made that good. See, if you saw the construction of the house, I was there, it was built in 1955, and Dean Brown done the design. And as I said, all the dormers and everything else looks just like a building at the school. The bricks itself are the same type of brick.
Mm-hmm.
And it's constructed on half of the cellar of the old foundation. He used to have a carriage house, but they tore it down. You probably saw that one. They tore it down too. People asked me about that. I said, he just tore it down. In fact, he wanted to tear down even that building back in my house, that miner. He said to me, one time he said to me, Barney, we need that building. I said, what do you got in? I said, different items and stuff like that. He said, you don't think we do it on? Well, that's up to you, Mr. Mullen. You want to tear down and save taxes. That was a nice building.
Yeah.
And people say, why the hell would you want to tear down a ring? Well, you just didn't want to pay the taxes on them, that's all.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the way it goes. And but the town of Lime Rock, actually, Lime Rock was the center of all activity. Although up here in Lakeville, they had the knife shop, the Hollyworks. They had a lot of Englishmen working there, too, you know, Hollyworks. Michael Familia, and Shuppie and England, you know.
Right.
And, that went on pretty good. That was run by the Rudd. I forget what his name was, the Rudd runner. And of course, the Spur Company, that was Mrs. Reed's father.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, that's what they used to run the feed and the coal and the lumber. So things wasn't too bad. But the whole thing was oriented around the Martin Richard Company. They owned a terrific amount of property.
Did a lot of people who worked in Lime Rock live in Lakeville and Salisbury? Or did
no.
They tend to live in, transportation being what it was in those days, yeah. I suppose it was.
People tend to, the ones in Lakeville lived up here, around Lakeville and Salisbury. And the ones that lived in Lime Rock, maybe one or two people might live in Salisbury, used to come down. A lot of the people done the transporting with the wagons and teams, you know, used to have homes here in Lakeville, Salisbury, or Lakeville. And used to, you know, they made two or three trips a day, which is considered pretty good, you know, in the summer.
Right.
So you couldn't draw more than 2.5 tons on a wagon. The horses couldn't pull it. You used to go up that Buddy Interlaken Inn. That was a hell of a job, too. My father was telling me different times when I worked with Slack, they would put them on one of these teams. Now, you drive on a team in the dead of the winter. You see, it gets so damn cold, you couldn't ride, you'd freeze that, so you'd walk along the wagon, and the horse is plodding along. Imagine hauling 2.5 ton from Lime Rock, from Ore Hill to Lime Rock. That's a long, drawn-out process, and the road was a dirt road. It was wicked, you know, in the wintertime, snow, drifts. I really don't see that. That was really hardships,
mm-hmm.
and that's what made the things so expensive.
Now, where did workers like your father come from? Was he a native of Lime Rock, or did he?
Well, he came from Italy originally.
Came from, was he born in Italy?
Yeah. He learned part of Italy.
How would he have found out about this?
Well, here, how's he found out? He came from Italy. At that time, you know, these immigrants coming to New York, and these employers looking for help. And when he got off the boat there, he said, unless you had some connection or knew somebody, they would tag these immigrants. Certain group was sent up in New England, certain groups were sent down to Pennsylvania. My father's brother was sent off to Colorado. He used to put them on these trains where they needed employees, and then he sent them out there. My father wound up in New Haven.
He came as a single man?
Yeah. He went to New Haven in the brickyard. And they were all Polish there. That was a crazy, you couldn't understand what they said. But one of the Polish fellows took a liking to him, so he went pretty good. He used to make these, he used to make the brick by hand. He used to stack them on these kills, you know, to bake them. Well, he stayed there for a while, and then he picked up some kind of a malaria fever. And he took sick for quite a while, and he found out where some of his friends were up around the Hartford area. So he went up to Hartford. He made a little money, went up to Hartford. At that time, boarding was cheap, $2 a week. They used to keep the boarder. And there, he told me 6 or 8 weeks before he got well on, so he came to work. Then he went to work in the tobacco fields. He worked there for quite a while in the tobacco fields. And then he found out a couple of his friends were up in this part of the state, well, around Canaan and Fallsville and Weimar. They run sawmills. So they said, why don't you come up here? You work in the woods, you know, chopping, you know, cordwood. And working in the sawmill. So he did. And I guess he got tired of it, and then he got a job in a furnace. You see, that's how then he got married, he got a job in a furnace. He worked there till the furnace went along pretty good. When that thing petered out, he went down to the foundry, in the upper part of the foundry, where they made the cartwheels. Then when that thing burned down, he went down to the lower foundry. And then when that burned down, then he got a job on the state highway. That was years back to one of the 26th, 27th. That's how most of these people got here.
Where did he meet your mother? Where did she
in Lime Rock. and give them, you know,
her family was already there.
Well, she was, she came over here to marry somebody, and when she got here, I guess either the fellow had gone, so my father met her, whether he got married. I said, well, most of the people, there was a lot of Frenchmen here too.
Yes, I remember.
And they worked in
charcoal
work. Well, you see, the ones that burned charcoal, they could either burn charcoal or cut logs, or you could cut logs in the sawmill. Well, my father never did much cordwood chopping. He got a job in a sawmill, you know, handling the slab, taking the slabs off, piling on lumber, and that went on quite a few years. It was pretty good. But then, see, he got this job in furnace, was more or less steady work. Of course, that's another thing, see, I forgot, he used to work 24 hours a day. Then to get on a night shift, it's going to teach you how to start where you could. And that went on pretty good. But then, as I said, the pig iron business petered out. And they were getting pig iron from these two furnaces in Canaan. And this, they closed this one down. They figured they didn't need this operation here. And so then he went down to the pond, the upper foundry, where they made these carpet. But,
certainly interesting. But it's
well, at that time, you know,
say it's surprising how thriving a community like Lime Rock was with all this industry.
Well, the thriving part, what I like about it at that time, you know, you see the kids here are always in trouble, all kinds of trouble. Years ago, we never had that trouble. So the kids used to play ball in the summer, or, you know, summer vacation, or they go fishing or go swimming. I live right next to the river and up on, or just below the Red Bridge, one of the Lamas of this building down back there. And you see Ken Athen and his brothers and all the guys went to school. They used to come up skinny dipping, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And Sundays, a lot of people went fishing.
Mm-hmm.
Mary Patterson's father, you know, her name was especially Aunt Bill Stanton. She grew up in Lime Rock, like her mother grew up there.
Mm-hmm.
She lived in the Upper Park. Her grandfather lived there. And Ted Gould, that died, he grew up there. You see, it was everybody knew each other, everybody helped each other, and everybody, they got along just great.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I saw my first automobile. I told you about this Belcher. I'll never forget that. He bought an Oldsmobile, first Oldsmobile I ever saw. Bright red Oldsmobile with brass trim. That was the height of all fashion at the time. And, you know, she was there more difficult as keeping that thing going on the road. That was the damnedest thing, you know. Nobody knew too much about cars.
Now, what year would that have been?
I think I was around 1918. And he got enough money to buy a car. I think he paid $600 or $700, and we thought it was a fortune.
Right.
He lived there where Ted Johnson lives, you know. Cynthia Johnson lives there.
Oh, yes.
Place.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this Belcher, we lived around it. We'd watch him on a Sunday. Everybody had a car or something. They'd back them on, they'd work on their car all day, polishing up and cleaning up. Then they'd start. It was nothing unusual. Get on the road about a mile and the goddamn thing come to a dead stop. Well, they spent another 3 hours trying to get the thing back to the garage.
Yeah.
Oh, it was wicked. The only one that had a pretty good look was Dick Barnum. Of course, he had two chauffeurs and they knew something about the cars and they'd keep them going, you know. But these other guys, one fellow had a Pope Hartford. Now, that's an old car.
Pope Hartford?
Pope Hartford. You know where they used to make them on Hartford. That's where you way back.
I have now. Now that you mentioned it, yes.
And he used to live there on that old furnace road. His name was Hall. And there were two brothers. They were coming. They had this car, and I don't believe they had that car. They ever get able to get that car downtown. They'd get it out, and they'd work on it, and they'd crank it, and work on it, and push it. Finally, it'd get going. Well, they'd get down by the Upper Lime Rock School about halfway down, and I think I'd just go bang! Stop right there. And they'd work on it. Every Sunday, the same thing. They'd finally get somebody to help them push it back to the garage. And I got his comrades, they used to wear these derbies. Now, at that time, he used to wear these little derbies. It was kind of watching them two guys with that goddamn car. I said the one time, them guys never got down the street with that car. And I don't know what, I suppose they didn't know nothing about mechanic. Of course, at that time, the things were new. Mm-hmm. And although it was supposed to be a good car and a proper used car to begin with, they can never get it functioning properly. But it was
Did you have a horse and buggy?
Horse.
So that you get around?
I mean, we used to go to Canaan, up to Santa Road. what they call a sand road. At that time, it was really sand. Mm-hmm. It was all sand, really. And we'd come to Salisbury. In fact, used to go to the movies. I used to hitch up the horse and wagon and tie them out there by where the old railroad station is, and we went to the movies and drive home. And we used to shop at the, you know, General Story, where the Lakeville Cafe used to be, Roberts. Yes. That's where the movies was too. And right. Then he moved up there where the Brothers is now, the music hall.
Stewart Theater.
Yeah, Stewart Theater. Mm-hmm. In fact, that was a stable before it was a theater.
Oh, really?
Horse stable. Sure. And up back of the, where the old Hollybock was. Of course, that was a big building. They had a drugstore, mm-hmm. barber shops. And next to it, they had a stable there too. And across the road, they had a, what the hell do they call it? The Winansco House. It was a big building, and they tore it down. It used to be a hotel.
An inn, yes.
An inn there. Mm-hmm. And this Peabody used to have a livery stable. There was a livery stable there, and it was labeled still where that Stewart Theater was. One would run, well, Stewart, his father, run the livery stable. I know all this because I had a fellow, Mark Francis, the Francis used to work for me. He used to tell me about it. And all that dirt was going to road up to Austin School. You know, when them willow trees were took them down years ago, and they built that road, and it was them willow trees.
Yes.
In the springtime, it was just like a mud hole there. Mm-hmm. And you go up there with these wagons, you know, and Peabody had the contract to all the students back and forth. They sent a horse and buggy up a wagon there, a rig, to take them either to Milton or take them out of Lakeville. And so Stewart finally petered out, and his son decided to make a movie theater. Peabody kept, there's none of them. Up to the last end, he kept buying new buggies and new wagons, and horses, and these fellas say, what are you buying all this stuff?
This is when automobiles were coming in.
He said, no. I said, they're not going to work. So they won't amount to nothing. Mark said, what are you talking about, Mr. Peabody? In fact, you had a fine Peabody up there. And Lyle Phillips, I know, you know, Park Silvanale's brother-in-law, him and his father used to run this farm, Peabody Farm, here up in Bellevue. He always insisted that the automobile wasn't going to do nothing in his business. It did, he just went to fire. And he used to mutter to himself and tell his son, I told you, Mr. Peabody, that the thing always started. I didn't think it was going to be that great, but anyway, I'll hang in here. You see, and he did. He used to send a race to Mutter and pick up the people and bring them back to the inn. And, of course, the lake was still there. Pretty good. But it was really something. And that's where the old community fuel is now. It's got the stables now back to community fuel.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
You know? And the knife shop, West Point, quite a few. That's about the only employment I had. I didn't know. I always remember a woodworking mill where the Lakeport Precision Moly was. There was a mill there at one time. Mm-hmm. They used to make shutters and stuff. A lot of people don't remember that. And of course, then you had the Davis Orbit, Michael Ryan, the old motel is there.
Yes, behind the school.
In fact, Perkins, she's still around.
Oh, yes.
Her husband was the foreman, mm-hmm. Perkins. That wasn't too practical. It was more or less of an open pit there. But you can find R&R practically any place around here, mm-hmm. even up on the Yamaha up there. R&R, I think, in fact, they did do some mining up there. But then there was a furnace over in Hollenbeck, too, you know, on the Hollenbeck Road.
Yes, mm-hmm.
And there's one down in Shannon Valley. You've seen that?
No, it's been a long time.
You cut across, get down to Shannon Valley, and keep going. It goes up around to Coleman Station. The foundation's still there. Mm-hmm. And there's one down in Kent.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, this has been very interesting. I appreciate your telling about this.
Well, I tell you,
you have a good recollection for
I really enjoyed it there. We used to, you know, go up the eighth grade, and the schooling wasn't bad at all. I think they'd done pretty well. Some of them done really well.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them amounted to quite a bit, too. I went to school with the Belder boys that lives on White Hollow,
mm-hmm.
As well as these other boys. All the Lorenzo family went there, and of course, a lot of them down White Hollow. We all walked up to school, mm-hmm. on buses. And as I said, they taught the reading, writing, arithmetic, and physics, and physiology and stuff like that. They didn't go into this exotic stuff like they do now.
Mr. Richardson was a science teacher, wasn't he?
Yeah. And he's pretty good.
Yes, he was. I taught with him. Mm-hmm. He was still teaching when I came here.
They had good teachers. In fact, up the Cannon, I wondered if teacher went down the reason. Mrs. Camp.
Oh, yes. I knew Mrs. Camp very well.
She was a hell of a good teacher.
Yes, mm-hmm. Very good friends.
She was one of the better ones up there. But the majority of them were pretty good. And of course, Mr. Frank Wilson, he kept a tight rein. They didn't have this hassling around him. Frank Wilson, he really was pretty rigid discipline.
Right.
Dr. Slew graduated from America, which is dead now. Oh, I don't became a graduate. Mm-hmm. You know, many people.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Perotti. I'm going to turn this off now. We'll see what we've got.